Right now, joining the program, Dr. Gail. It's time for Ask Dr. Gail, our family therapist on Parents Place. You can find her page, parentsplace.com/expert/family. How's it going, Gail?
Good, good. Well, getting ready for Halloween here.
And that is a big, huge family energy time.
It is.
Man, that's when you break out, as moms, I think, we break out all the stops.
And become kids ourselves.
Yeah, that too. And let's go ahead and go to our questions again. You can find, people can find your page, parentsplace.com/expert/family, and that's where they can also submit questions and click into the Making Healthy Families board and the An Easier Childbirth message board as well. Well, this is a big topic. I like this one. The partner is a pack rat. Dr.
Gail, like
this is from Tom. My wife is a pack rat. We live in a small house, and yet she saves broken items that will never be mended and constantly brings home yard sale bargains that we don't need. I have thrown out broken mementos, wire stems cut from artificial flowers, and more, and she never notices. How can I help her realize it's counterproductive to bring this junk home?
Whoa. Well, this is the couple's battle,
isn't it? It is.
The battle for the right way to have the house or the right way to be. The couple's dilemma is who's going to impose their imprint on the family.
Yeah. That's such a huge one.
It's a huge one, and you have to find compromise. That's the big, with the big C, marriage means compromise. So this is not an unusual complaint, but the answer is that you have to find your own culture. You've got to make it work.
Yes.
So, you know, there are do's and don'ts, and, I'd be happy to hear also from you, Lydia, if you have any do's or don'ts about this. But I think it's just endemic. I mean, I think all of us have, there's somebody who's neater, there's somebody who's messier. What do you do? And when your relationship gets strained, that becomes the focus, even though it may not bother you otherwise.
Yeah.
But here we have, you know, somebody who probably does have quite a legitimate complaint.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so how's he going to work it out? You know, the do's here. It are that he needs to talk with his wife about community space. You know, what in the house is community space? Is it the living room, the kitchen? You know, in that space, they need to come up with rules about, you know,
right.
We keep our mess out of here, or we don't leave our books in here. We put them in our offices or, you know, somewhere, this corner or on this desk, so that, you know, he can feel some control about the space, that he doesn't feel overrun by her style, really.
Yeah, I think that's such a good way to say it, Gail. I have the experience of being with a partner who was a lot neater than I was, or didn't save things.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who thought that you should keep all your possessions in two bags, and that you shouldn't have any more than that.
Right.
And I, because I tried to go along with his style to make compromises, it had lasting ramifications on my self-esteem, because I was with a man that told me that my style was not okay, that there was something wrong with me.
Right.
And I know that, unfortunately, that happens a lot, that you get self-esteem messages from your partner in terms of your style.
Yes, and you can hear this in Tom's complaint. You know,
right.
He really feels that somebody needs to sort of shake her to her senses and show her that her way is wrong. But, you know, this is something that's a style, and there are compromises, but her way isn't wrong. It's just different.
Yeah.
So finding a way to make it work, this community space idea, and it's true that oftentimes the person, you know, in his position may feel like, well, the default is towards the other person. They're just going to leave their stuff around, you know, and so I'm stuck with this. And so they really need some way to answer that for themselves. Like, let's say his wife leaves a bunch of pile of books or papers on the coffee table, and they have agreed that this is not what she's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes she forgets. What can he do to avoid this tiresome nagging and all of this? What he can do is come up with a quick, easy way that they agree to, that if she does this, he can just pile it in on her desk, or pile it in a corner, or pile it in a basket. And she may not like it,
mm-hmm.
but you know, she knows that's the consequence if she forgets, because she's going to forget sometimes. And he has some recourse.
Right.
You know, I do this with my husband's shirts. Mm-hmm. He leaves them, you know, on the couches, and I put them on, you know, the chair in his office. I just, mm-hmm. you know, hang them there. And he's gotten used to it, you know, because he doesn't put things away as quickly as I do.
Right.
So I have to find a way that if it bothers me, and he hasn't done it, I can have some control over the community space without resorting to this tiring nagging. You know, come get your shirt.
Exactly.
It ruins marriages, right?
Indeed. And well, in all the family relationships, I think this comes into account. And in terms of, you know, coming up with strategies when you're both in a good mood.
That's a very good idea, striking when the iron is cold, not when it's hot.
Exactly. Come out with, you know, when you're both feeling good and you both are having high self-esteem days, then sit down and say, okay, what strategies are we going to use for this since we have different styles?
Right. And troubleshoot for when they don't work.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, he could get her a storage unit, right?
Yeah. that's an idea. Or I have a friend that they actually have an apartment that's in the back of their house. And instead of renting it out, that's his place. And
uh-huh.
And she never, ever goes there. She's a work-at-home mom, and she can't handle his mess, so he has his own place to go, and she never darkens the door.
Great.
And she says, and he keeps all of his stuff there, and it's out of control, according to her, mm-hmm. and he's perfectly happy, so it's good. I like that. If you have enough money that you can, you know, each have your own room or your own space, that's really...
Even if you have, like, you know, a desk or something, even if it's a small space, or, uh-huh. or you can get baskets to put things in.
Right.
You know, I mean, even that can help.
Right.
But you've touched on something else, which is the negative side, the don'ts, you know.
Uh-huh.
What you don't want to do is criticize how your partner keeps his or her space. Once you decide this is separate space, it's not fair to go in and then criticize it and put him or her down.
Right.
You know, and it works both ways. I mean, mm-hmm. the other person can come in, the other partner could come in and say, oh, gosh, you know, I hear this a lot. You're so anal.
Yeah.
You know, I just can't believe you're so uptight. You put everything away. You know, I mean, it can go both ways.
Right.
It isn't.
And either way, when you're putting down, I mean, that's a really important thing, because I think so many of us give ourselves negative messages when it's our style that is sort of intrinsic to our personality.
Right. We want to think that we're right rather than we're different. And this leads to something else to keep in mind is, you know, it really is the differences and the ability to compromise without squelching each other that maintains the passion in a marriage.
Yeah.
Because that gives you a healthy tension, which can add vitality, you know, if it's not a negative thing. And again, like you talk about, Lydia, as you said, the self-esteem that can be eroded if you're telling your partner that their way is wrong,
mm-hmm.
that's going to erode the passion in the marriage, the respect, you know, all of that. But if you can keep a healthy balance of tension and say, yeah, my husband is like this, you know, or my wife is like that, and you know, you have ways to deal with it. You can joke about it, you can mm-hmm. tease about it, and you can accept it.
Right.
The other don't is don't throw your wife's things out.
Exactly.
You know, there's ways to, you know, don't throw your wife's things out. This is disrespectful.
Yeah.
So one person's junk is another's treasure, and we have to find ways to understand that if we want to maintain the passion there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I like that. I like it. Don't throw the stuff out if you want passion. Let's go on to our other. We could spend hours talking about this topic. This is very juicy, but we're going to go to the next one. Connie sent in this. Is moodiness normal for a two-year-old? My son will be 2 years old in November. When I get on to him or he gets in trouble, he often cries for a few seconds, then immediately starts laughing and smiling as if nothing had happened, though tears are still streaming down his face. I don't think this is normal, and I'm often surprised when he does this. I'm worried, because this means he is moody or has emotional problems.
Oh, no. No emotional problems here. This is not a sign of emotional problems. This is a sign of your two-year-old is playing with you. Setting limits mm-hmm. is a game mm-hmm. at 2 years old to get your attention. They want to test limits. You know, what's mom going to do? Is this really the way things are, or is this a game? And he's
uh-huh.
doing it. And so when she responds and he gets a rise out of her, he laughs. He wants to engage in a game with her. So it's not anything to be worried about.
Mm-hmm.
it's something to realize that two-year-olds have to learn self-control. They can't internalize it yet.
Yeah.
So how they learn it is by, literally, by learning it from experience, by you taking something away when you say, I'm going to take this toy away if you throw it. Oh, really? You know, so they throw it.
Then I'm going to throw it.
Oh, this is what she means. Experientially, taking the toy away, I now experience what this is like. I don't know what it's like until Mom takes the toy away. And then after that happens, say, three times, and it's about three times, then the child starts to anticipate the feeling of not having the toy in advance. But that's, you know, that's sort of a complex thing to...
Yeah.
To imagine what a consequence is going to be. A two-year-old, we forget, you know.
Yeah.
A two-year-old can't do this. They literally have to learn it over and over and over again. So my advice would be, you know, set the limits neutrally. Don't engage in laughing back with him or even being overly worried. Do it just very, very calmly, matter-of-factly. When he laughs, don't laugh back. Just take the, you know, the toy away or whatever. Don't engage in the game, and he'll learn.
Mm-hmm.
Hasn't that been your experience,
Lydia? Yeah, I
think
so, and the calmness is really important. Now, when they get a little older, there starts, I mean, sometimes I know in disciplining my child or setting limits for him, I guess would be a better way to say it, sometimes we use laughter about that, or I'd lighten things up about that when he's older, like, you know, well, you know, I said no, and that's my mom job. You know, it's in the book.
Right,
like,
right.
It's in the mom handbook. I can't go back. You know,
right.
I can't go back on this now.
So that's using humor in a therapeutic way, not playing with him about it, really, but just, you know, he understands what you mean there, and you're also keeping it neutral and light rather than personal. You're almost saying, you know, this isn't a personal thing. I don't think you're a bad person. You did this. You just broke the rules, and this is a consequence. That's it.
And that way, well, sometimes I do that because it's helpful for me to then keep neutral.
Yeah, that's really a good point. If we can use humor to keep ourselves lighter, then we're not going to get into that kind of power struggle, which we definitely want to stay out of with our children, if at all possible.
Now, at what age, when do the kids start really getting this whole consequence? When developmentally do they start understanding that consequence?
You know, it's gradual and progressive, but by three, it's happening a lot more. They still can have, you know, they can still have tantrums, but they tend to diminish by three. And then by four, you can see an even larger jump towards a real integration and an ability to control themselves that that they didn't have when they were three. I mean, it's remarkable, really. The emotional development between the ages of two and four, it's just miles and miles and miles, light years even.
Wow.
So keep in mind, you know, this is a two-year-old. They literally can't understand what you're saying, even though you think they understand, especially if they're very verbal.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't. They don't know. Even the words they're using, they don't completely experience them.
Yeah. Thanks so much. Once again, we've been talking with Dr. Gail. You can find her page on parentsplace.com/expert/family, or you can go to Parents Place, click on Experts, and then you can find Dr. Gail Peterson, and we talk to her every Friday at this time, and you can also find links to her board. Thank you so much for joining us
today. Thank you. See you next week.
All right.
Bye-bye.